Call to order this meeting of the Tax Expenditure Review Commission. And we will take the roll. Somebody has to take the roll.
Senator Rest?
Present.
Rest present. Representative Abaje?
Present.
Abaje present. Representative Davids?
Present.
Senator Joskowski? Senator Joskowski?
Present.
Joskowski present. Representative Elkins? Representative Joy?
Present.
Joy present. Senator Klein? Commissioner Marquardt? Senator Weber?
Present.
Weber present.
Thank you. The record will show that we have achieved a quorum. Those who are absent are excused. The first item on the agenda is approval or consideration of the minutes from March 15th. Are there any corrections or additions to the minutes? Seeing none, they stand approved as presented. The next item is presentation and discussion of selected tax expenditures according to our agenda. There are three we're going to be considering: the home mortgage interest, the interest on contributions to the first-time home buyer account, which that program has gotten wonderful news in the last couple of days of Minnesotans being able to buy a home for the first time through some of the funds that have become available. So it'll be interesting to see the comments that the LBO has about that program. Was that just by way of comment, my Rotary Club this morning, and one of our members is a realtor who works specifically with first-time home buyers who first in a generation and first in their families ever to own a home that they're aware of. So in any country, which I think is one of the requirements of some of the programs. So be interesting to hear about that, and then the Angel Investment Credit. So Mr. Whitaker, welcome to the commission, and we are pleased to hear your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just pull up the slides real fast here.
You're going to have to speak really loudly and into the mic.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Carlos Whitaker. And as you mentioned, we'll be presenting on these three tax expenditures: the home mortgage interest deduction, the subtraction for interest on contributions to a first-time home buyer savings account, and the Angel Investment Credit. So to start off, the home mortgage interest deduction can be found under index number 1.66 in the Department of Revenue's 2022 tax expenditure budget. The home mortgage interest deduction reduces taxable income for filers subject to the individual income tax. And this is an itemized deduction, meaning that a filer would have to forego the standard deduction to benefit from this tax expenditure. This deduction applies to interest paid on up to $750,000 of debt used to mortgage a primary or secondary residence. The use of the loan is limited to the purchase, construction, or improvement of the residence. The deduction does not apply to home equity loans or to mortgage insurance premiums. This tax expenditure has been available in Minnesota since 1933, and most recently available data estimates a fiscal impact of $91.8 million in fiscal year 2024 and 138,100 claims filed in tax year 2021. As you can reference on the slide, the proposed objective for this tax expenditure is to recognize expenses incurred in generating personal income or wealth. Based on our research, there's not an explicit tax expenditure objective stated in the legislative record. And to summarize much of the literature on this tax expenditure, the purpose is unclear. However, much of the literature points to the historical context of the federal interest deduction, from which we can draw parallels to the mortgage interest deduction. And so the literature explains that the purpose of the federal interest deduction, as it was introduced in 1913, was to recognize the cost of doing business and building taxable income or wealth. So to build on that, the federal interest deduction applied broadly to personal, business, household, and living expenses without particular distinction to any the type of expense. Over time, Congress has established more guardrails and around the type of expenses that would qualify for interest deduction. They've created more definitions around what we now refer to as the mortgage interest deduction. An alternative objective to this tax expenditure that is often referenced is that it is meant to promote home ownership. However, based on the literature, there's little evidence to suggest that this was the intent of federal or state lawmakers when the interest deduction was adopted. Additionally, there is some academic research to suggest that the mortgage interest deduction may have unintended impacts on the housing market. So in terms of how we might measure this tax expenditure, the commission may consider an analysis of the rate of claims and value of those claims over time. Specifically, the commission might consider a comparison of the claims before the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017 and after. So the Tax Cut and Jobs Act nearly doubled the standard deduction, a change that Minnesota conformed to. And so this might help to understand the value of the mortgage interest deduction to Minnesotans that choose to forego this increased standard deduction. Additionally, the commission may want to consider a comparison of effective tax rates of homeowners who take the deduction versus those who do not but have similar income level. So this would get the concept of horizontal equity. So measuring, you know, how this tax expenditure impacts those that have the same income level. And then to build off of that, the commission may consider looking at effective tax rates of taxpayers claiming the mortgage interest deduction and assessing the impact of the deduction on tax rates across different income deciles. So then this would get at the tax principle of vertical equity, or understanding how the tax expenditure impacts taxpayers across those different income levels. So Madam Chair, members, that's a brief overview of the mortgage interest deduction, and I'm happy to take questions or move on to the next review.
Thank you very much. I think it it really is helpful to have review of the history of the mortgage interest deduction, and I appreciate the comments that are made in the background, and I have some questions about what's happened since. So the reduction from 1 million to 750,000 was temporary on the federal income tax return, and returned to $1 million after 2018. Is that correct? And it's only, and maybe the revenue to people know that, but it has, we conformed in that year to the $750,000 limit, and we left it there. Is that, am I reading that correctly from your information?
Madam Chair and members, that's correct that Minnesota's level is at, limit is at 750,000 currently. I'd have to check on the federal limit to see if that went back up to 1 million.
Second.
Department of Revenue? Do you know? You're checking? Okay. You know, I'm just curious why next time around we didn't go back and reconform to the million in 2019. Or we did it, we did, in 2019, we did the 750,000, but the next big bill, and I'm looking, Senator Weber, at you here, 2021 would have been the next budget year. We had split government. Republicans had the Senate. Was there any discussion about why to keep that limit at 750,000? As you, I don't recall it at all.
Yeah. Well, I chaired the property tax, Madam Chair. I chaired the property tax subcommittee at that point, yeah. And I don't believe there was ever any discussion regarding that particular issue.
Of changing it
back to a million.
Changing it back, yeah. To...
at least not to my recollection.
In changing it back to a million. The, we must have said 750,000 was good, and we rejected reconforming, is the way I read that sentence. We did not go back to that, and probably, I mean, a reasonable explanation would be we wanted to support other kinds of tax expenditures and left that one alone. I don't see any particular policy reason why it would be 750 or 800 or 700 or whatever, other than a numbers issue, and we thought that was must have thought that was adequate. Of course, now it's also subject to from the 2023 bill to the overall limitation on itemized deductions, period, that reaches its highest point for taxpayers that have $1 million in income. I believe it's AGI, where they may only take 20% of their itemized deductions of any kind, including certainly including mortgage interest. Also, I think it's important, the last paragraph on the front page, that because we did with the TCJA in 17, double the standard deduction, and then we, you know, adjust that, and for our bill last year, correct it, fewer people take the itemized deduction, because they don't meet the limit on they don't get to the allowable limit on the standard deduction, and I think the. On the second page, just to note where the what's the objective for this? Clearly, both it and Senator Weber, in particular, since you mentioned serving on the property tax division in the Senate, it is to encourage home ownership in Minnesota. We have one of the highest rates of home ownership. As I believe, or I believe we do, is what I mean, and the mortgage interest deduction and all of the refunds and tax rates, et cetera, in our property tax system certainly acts to support that particular objective. Any other comments before we move on to the other? Mr. Ouellette, do you have a comment? Sure, go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, I'm Eric Ouellette with the Department of Revenue. Regarding the federal limitation,
yes,
that is one of the provisions of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that is set to return to previous law in 2026, but it is still at $750,000. But you may recall that there were many provisions that impacted individual tax that were temporary and are set to expire, like the doubling of the standard deduction. So it remains to be seen whether the federal limit will return to a million or
not. So currently, it's not an add back on the Minnesota return of any kind, and will be as part of that overall discussion at the federal level about whether to continue the tax policies in the TCGA. Correct,
Madam Chair, that's correct.
But I'm going to write that down here. It's good that it's. Yeah, the temporarily in that second line is in the second paragraph is didn't mean a 1 year one. It meant the TCGA or the that expires in 2027. The record will show that Representative Gomez has joined us. Okay, anything else?
Madam Chair.
Representative Abanchi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to the LBO for the report. My only question is I just kind of wanted to see if there's any further background. You had mentioned that academics had seen maybe that there's potential unintended consequences on the housing market. If you could just describe that a little bit more, what the research is showing in that regard.
Yeah, Madam Chair and members, so some of the literature discusses that that home prices reflect kind of the deduction, and so home prices become inflated. Also that this, because of the standard deduction, folks that take advantage of this are mostly higher income earners and end up buying larger homes. So this kind of promotes the purchase of larger homes. And again, kind of inflating the market, prices of homes, and that kind of a cycle.
Wouldn't it be, if more homeowners are using the standard deduction, nevertheless, it might be harder to identify that because they don't have to report it. It's not an individually reported item to take the standard deduction. They can take the standard deduction for any number of reasons. So the impact would seem to me to be unknown, which you know. Why do you say that with that, and thanks for bringing that up, I hadn't read quick enough to get to that part here, unintended economic impacts, what would one of those be?
Madam Chair members, like I mentioned, the fact that the price of homes start to reflect the fact that these deductions are available to folks.
I am having trouble hearing you, if you could really speak louder.
Sure, yep, Madam Chair and members, like I mentioned, that home prices start to tend to reflect the availability of this deduction in their prices. And so that is not necessarily an intended effect of this policy.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah. Is that, oh,
Yes,
Responsive to you, Representative Baker.
Yeah, that's helpful for what I was thinking about. So I think, you know, as this moves forward in terms of the report, it would be interesting to see if we can pick up if that's actually happening in Minnesota, or where the incentives are pushing people towards who do take this deduction or not take this deduction, if there's a way to tease that out. I think that would be great. Might be also helpful to kind of maybe better understand if the purpose of this is to try to promote home ownership, which it sounds like at both the state and the federal level, that may be part of why we have such a deduction. Maybe if there's a way to make sure that that's actually what it's doing, considering that we have put forward various policies to really try to promote home ownership here in Minnesota. And while Madam Chair is right, we do have high ownership rates in Minnesota, it's not across the board, and we would try to want to make sure that we're doing all we can to close those gaps where we can. Thank you.
Well, I think, too, and then I'll call on Representative Gomez, if we recall from 100 years ago and when we started, I don't recall when Minnesota started taxing income, but with the federal income, there was an expense deduction, but it was not, according to your comments, but it was not, didn't differentiate what kind of interest expense, just debt. And so to say explicitly that it was benefiting people considering home ownership would be a stretch, although it would seem to me that today everything, every benefit, including the mortgage interest deduction, is going to be taken into effect or taken into consideration when a person decides and a family decides to buy a home. We at least anecdotally know that the price of homes is affected by the interest rates that people can get, and you can pay more if you can pay less. If the interest rate is down, you tend to think you can afford more of a house, and then when the interest rates go up, it is it's a chilling factor on people considering buying homes. And so that interest rate, and I think that's part of the story from yesterday and the day before, the first-time home buyer program, that we need to pay attention to. Anyway, Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Agbaje covered most of what I was kind of thinking as I was looking at these materials, but I guess just one thing that I want to add is like, if this, if we do sort of agree that the intent of you know, this almost $100 million a year is to encourage homeownership, I think it's really important that we tease out for whom, right? Who's being encouraged by this deduction? And certainly there's not perfect correlation between level of income and those who choose to itemize or to take the standard deduction. But that information would be very important because I think, you know, if we are, there's some correlation there between higher income individuals opting to itemize their deductions because it's more advantageous for them. Mm-hmm. And so I just think like that needs to be a part of our overall analysis is, you know, are we spending $100 million to incentivize homeownership for the richest 3% of Minnesotans? If so, is that like what we think we should be doing with those dollars or that kind of tax revenue that we're foregoing? But thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Gomez. Senator Drazkowski has his hand up next. Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if I missed it in the presentation of slides because I was unable to view them, but I didn't see it reflected in the written material. The question is, do we have the the number before and after the TCJA of participants in this program.
Mr. Whitaker?
Yep, Madam Chair, Senator Skousky, we do not have the information available right now. That was one of the proposed metrics that the commission may consider. And so we can certainly include that as part of the evaluation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Draskowski, is that responsive?
That it is. Thank you so much.
Senator Weber?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, over the last few years, we've seen a dramatic downturn, at least until the last 2 years. We saw a dramatic downturn in interest rates. But we've also seen a dramatic increase in prices of homes. I think that the discussion that we are having as to try and determine the equity of this is going to be extremely difficult to achieve. Because at the end of the day, okay, if you have a $200,000 loan on your home, and I'm not going to try to do all the math in my head, except just very simple math. And let's just say you have a 5% mortgage, which would be low at what is being quoted today. Mm-hmm. But if you got it a couple years ago, you'd be at that. You've got $10,000 a year interest, if you were figuring simple interest. And if you're at the 7% bracket, you save $700 of state income tax. And I think $700 is important to a family budget, but I don't think it necessarily is enough to make you jump up and buy a next higher level priced home, is what I'm saying. So I think that sometimes we get caught up in the discussion about those type of issues, but when you start to look at the actual numbers, I don't know that it's something that really is making prices jump substantially. Mm-hmm. Now, I live in an area where a $200,000-$300,000 house is probably more like $400,000 to $600,000 up here.
Sure.
And you know, have to recognize that there are market differences in the various areas of the state. But I think once you start to really look at the simple math of it, if people are buying, are going up, if that $700 makes a difference to buy a higher price range house, I think they need to have a class in budgeting at that point.
Hmm. Okay, Senate Counsel points out that and I guess that was 2019 or 2021 that we decoupled?
Madam Chair, 2019.
In 2019, you may recall, we totally decoupled from the federal, federal taxable income as the starting point for calculating Minnesota taxable income, and we went to adjusted gross income. And we didn't want to be as dependent on any kind of a calculation by the IRS and the feds of what taxable income was. We wanted to put our own stamp on it, and we then also included in that some allowances for itemized deductions, nevertheless, that came from the TCJA, like the $750,000. And there is no automatic conformity in 2027 if that section of the TCJA is repealed, raising that limit to $100,000, because we explicitly say in our law it's $750,000. And that, I think, is probably unlikely to happen. I think we probably, in my opinion, we probably turned more to the property tax system itself for initiatives to encourage home ownership. But I do think anything that reduces the cost of home ownership, regardless of whether it is, whether you are modest income or whether you are affluent, is an encouragement, is the state's encouragement for home ownership and should be part of the objective. We, just like all the property tax refunds, the class rate, or so on, are part of that overall objective. Seems to me that I'm going to ask for an amendment to the tax expenditure objective there to include not just recognize expenses incurred in generating personal income or wealth, but as part of the overall objective of encouraging home ownership at all levels of income. Certainly not barring, not putting up obstructions to discouraging people, rich or modest income folks, from owning homes rather than renting, for example, like they do in some states. I find it just appalling. In the state of Montana, in Bozeman, which is a university town, Montana State is there, that the, and I think I might have mentioned this publicly once or twice before, the average price of a home for anybody is between $700,000 and $800,000. And the reason for that comes from a lot of California millionaires or billionaires, who knows, escaping high California taxes but able to afford a $700,000 or $800,000 home. The impact of that, of course, is to discourage others. Montana State, as I understand it, and again, anecdotally, has a hard time attracting faculty to Montana State because they're, the new faculty simply can't afford to live there, and they have to, you know, live way far out, 50, 60 miles away, to be able to teach at Montana State. And we've noticed that when we've tried to have, to use tax increment financing for housing in places like War Road, because you go to the bank, you can't get a loan because as soon as you build a house or build the housing, the value drops in it, and you can't make the payments on it because you can't make the rents. And we have yet to find a silver bullet there in that instance to how we manage that gap financing, because of course the banks don't want to give builders a loan for a piece of property whose value drops down as soon as the construction is complete. So it's a catch-22 for some otherwise, I'll say industrialized, but one industry towns, for example, and certainly certainly we have noticed that and not been able to solve that in northwestern Minnesota. So I want to come back to make that amendment to an objective there. I wonder, Senator Weber, if you would look at doing that while we move on to, I can't do that myself, of course, while we move on to a presentation of the second one, which is, contributions to first-time homebuyers.
Okay, yep. Madam Chair, members, the next presentation is on the interest contribution to a first-time
home. And again, I'm going to really ask you to speak right into the mic and loudly, please.
Okay. Yep. Madam Chair, members, the next presentation is on the interest on contributions to a first-time homebuyer savings account. This tax expenditure can be found in the Department of Revenue's tax expenditure budget under number 1.81. The tax expenditure impacts, again, the individual income tax. It allows for a subtraction from federal adjusted gross income equal to the interest earned on contributions to a savings account that is designated as a first-time home buyer savings account. There are annual and lifetime contribution limits to these first-time savings accounts, as well as balance limits. Expenditure was enacted in 2017, and it is estimated that the fiscal impact of the tax expenditure is less than $50,000 per fiscal year, and that's according to the 2022 tax expenditure budget, and that's true for fiscal years 2022 through fiscal years 2025. According to the 2022 tax expenditure budget, there were 60 claims for this tax expenditure in the year 2020. The proposed objective for this tax expenditure is to support and encourage first-time homebuyers to save for the purchase of a home. And that proposed objective is informed by the bill author's presentation of House File 1234 in the House State Government Finance Committee on March 7th of 2017. In terms of evaluating this tax expenditure, the Commission may consider analyzing Schedule M1 home forms submitted to the Department of Revenue to better understand trends in utilization of the tax incentive. The Schedule M1 home form is required to file for the subtraction, and it records contributions and withdrawals to designated first-time homebuyer savings accounts. So again, an analysis of these transactions might just highlight utilization and efficacy of the program in terms of incentivizing this type of saving. The Commission may also consider comparing this program to direct spending programs that provides several loan options to first-time home buyers, such as the Minnesota Startup Program. And so that might just help the Commission understand the efficiency of this program compared to a more direct program. So those are just some metrics that the Commission may consider in terms of how it might evaluate this tax expenditure. So just understanding the filing, the savings behavior through the forms that are submitted to the department, as well as understanding how it compares to a more of a direct spending type program.
So there are lots of questions that I think come up on this one. It's certainly not used very much, according to the information here. If you do it, though, okay, it's a contribution, and then you can subtract the interest income that's for to get to your AGI for Minnesota. This is not a federal program. Right. For Minnesota. The contribution itself, is that taxable income to the beneficiary when they go to use it as part of a down payment or closing costs? or constructing or financing?
So, Madam Chair, members, the question to whether the contributions are tax...
Is it, you know, subject to the gift tax? I mean, is it a gift? How does a beneficiary report the actual contribution when they go to use it?
So, Madam Chair, through the Schedule M1 home form that is submitted to the department, the deposits to the designated savings account are recorded in that form. And so that's how they're tracked. And I think any further questions to, like, the administration of the benefit, I would have to defer to the department. We had some internal confusion about the contributions themselves, if they're tax exempt or then taxed later. And so we were just trying to cross-examine the M1 form with the Schedule M1 home form. So there's two forms. And so in terms of, I believe you might have had a question about whether the contributions themselves are tax exempt. And I might have misunderstood that question, but that's what I heard.
No, I don't think you have, but I still don't understand how it works.
Okay.
So you put $10,000 mm-hmm. into an account mm-hmm. To help your kid mm-hmm. eventually buy a home.
Right.
And it would be their first home. So this is not never having owned, like the program that we talked about at the beginning. This is not first time ever home buyers or anybody in your home ever owning a home. This is a first time home buyer, irrespective of anyone else in your home and your family having owned one.
Right.
So is it like the 529 programs for colleges or and you get up to $150,000 eventually. You can provide that for, and the simplest thing for a couple of parents to provide that for their kid to put to either pay for a home, maybe, or to contribute down payment. But what's the relationship of that money to the beneficiary, Mr. Ouellette?
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, again, Eric Ouellette from the Department of Revenue. The two questions. The money contributed to the account is... regular income, so it would be post-tax. After-tax income that
right.
goes in. If the money is coming from someone else in the form of a gift, think about that transfer separately as a separate potentially taxable event, depending on whether it meets the thresholds or not. So if I, as a parent, am giving money to my child to put into one of these accounts, that could potentially qualify as a gift with tax consequences. The child then putting it into the account, that's just a separate contribution to their own
home savings
account.
Okay, if it's a self,
if I'm putting,
contribution that you put in, and I'm going to own a home, first-time homeowner, I make a contribution into this program, the savings interest in that account is a subtraction from AGI.
Madam Chair, that's correct. So the money I put in
is... my parents doing it, they get the subtraction. Is that correct?
No. I believe the parent would be giving the money to the child as a gift.
I see.
That's a separate transaction that may or may not qualify for the gift tax, depending on the size and the circumstances. So I don't think a third party directly would put money in.
It's a savings account that you don't have to pay taxes on the
Earnings.
On the interest.
If it's used for the purposes contemplated.
Use it to buy a house or to build a house, is that?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
And it doesn't look to be very attractive. I mean, we might, this is one way we might want to say, well, wait a minute, why are we doing this? Why wouldn't we, if we really wanted to encourage this, and particularly at this point, for more modest income, first-time home buyers, why not put more money into the program that we just had been ballyhooed this week, which I believe the maximum amount of assistance is 32,000. I couldn't remember whether I knew it was more than 28, but I didn't know whether it was 38. It's 32,000. Mm-hmm. And why doesn't that meet the objective better than a program like this? Or some people can come back and say, well, why take something away from some people that nevertheless are using, but it certainly doesn't cost very much, $50,000 a year. We might want to look at that. Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to be clear for Mr. Ouellette, is this tax program, the interest on contributions to a first-time home buyer account, is that the only reason for the existence of the account? Is that the sole reason? Is there any other reason or benefit attributable to the account, or is this account created only for the demonstration of meeting the requirements of this program?
Mr. Ouellette?
Madam Chair, Senator Drazkowski, you're correct. This is a restricted account, so the money that you put into that can only be used for the purposes of the program to maintain the tax deferral. And that may partly answer some of the take-up limitations.
I would assume that if someone withdrew the money and used it for another purpose, there are provisions in the statute that deal with the clawback and repayment of the interest with penalties. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, I believe that's correct, but I'll verify that with department staff and let you know if that's not correct.
This is not an old program. This was something apparently started in 2017. So this is a rather new, certainly relative to the mortgage interest deduction. Representative, Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess just one comment. This may be a demonstration for our purposes of, to what extent do people make decisions based on these tax expenditure programs, at least around housing, and even referring back to the last one, do people make housing decisions based on what the tax code says? Mm-hmm. In this case, obviously, 60 people using this program tells us out of, how many millions of people or how many millions of homeowners in Minnesota, how many millions or hundreds of thousands of first-time home buyers each year that buy homes. It'd be interesting to see calculate the percentage of them that actually participate in this program. And I think we're gonna find through those numbers that this tax incentive doesn't, if the effort is to change behavior or encourage behavior around buying a house, This particular program doesn't appear to do it.
Okay, any other comments? Senator Weber?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one question. Mr. Willett referred to a gift tax situation. Does the state carry the same limitation on gifting as the federal government, which is $18,000?
Mr. Willett?
Madam Chair and members, I'm sorry, I did not look up the gift tax prior to this hearing, so I don't know the answer to that.
All right, very good, thank you.
Okay, any other comments? It seems to me the objective is fairly clearly stated, even if we might have some misgivings about whether it is has much of this particular part of the statute has much much effect on the on it. Mr. Whitaker, you want to go ahead with the Angel Investment Credit then? And we are we're scheduling this meeting for an hour and a half, so I think we're going to have so we're not rushing, which I think we found ourselves in position for the last time. So we have time to think about it. We're going to come back to the home mortgage interest for to get some language for us to consider regarding the adding the purpose of encouraging home ownership. But if we would go on now with the Angel Investment Credit.
Yep. Madam Chair, members, again, for the record, my name is Carlos Whitaker. The last presentation is on the Angel Investment Credit, referenced by number 1.94 in the Department of Revenue's 2022 tax expenditure budget. This tax expenditure is also referred to as the Small Business Investment Tax Credit. This tax expenditure provides for a refundable credit to investors that invest in a small qualifying business. The credit is equal to 25% of the investment, with individual limits of up to $250,000 for married couples filing jointly, $125,000 for individuals. There is a cap on the dollar amount of total credits issued. Currently, that cap is set at $5 million a year, and that cap has changed in past years, but currently it's at $5 million. The statute provides requirements that businesses must meet in order to qualify for participation in this program. There are 11 requirements set in statute. Examples of some of these requirements are that the headquarters of these businesses must be located physically in Minnesota. The company must have fewer than 25 employees. 51% of their employees and payroll must be physically located in Minnesota. 51% of the value of service contracts must be performed in Minnesota. Those are some examples of the requirements that are set out in statute for participating businesses. There are also requirements for investors and for investment funds that choose to participate in the program. Those are also laid out in statute. This tax expenditure was enacted in 2010 and was set to sunset in 2014. The credit has been extended several times, including the most recent extension in 2023, which pushed the sunset date out to December 31st, 2024. This credit is administered by the Department of Employment and Economic Development. The most recent annual report published by the department in March 2024 states a fiscal impact of $4 million $4,378,987 for calendar year 2023. And this came from 231 credit certificates that were issued and where ultimately qualifying investments were made. So I say that because the department may issue more credits and then those individual investors may choose to not use them in that year. Whatever amount is not used in that year of the $5 million can be rolled over into the next year. So the proposed objective for the Angel Investment Credit is to encourage investment in innovative small businesses in Minnesota. This objective is informed by the program description as it's laid out in statute, the definitions of the program, and the requirements of the program. Also, a retroactive statement of purpose was provided in House File 991 in the second engrossment of the 2021 regular legislative session. Ultimately, that that statement was not included in the final passage of that bill, but it was a source that our office looked at in terms of informing the proposed objective. In terms of measuring this tax expenditure, DEED is required to provide an annual report to the legislature with specific performance measurements, such as the number and the amount of credits that are issued, the recipients of the credit, information about the businesses that participate, such as their location, their line of business, the total amount of investment that each business receives, and there are several other requirements that the report must provide. Additionally, the report does provide the number of direct job growth. So the commission may consider this annual report in terms of evaluating this credit. Additionally, the commission may consider comparing the outcomes of the credit to a direct payment program like the Minnesota Launch Grant, which provides grants up to $35,000 to small innovative businesses. And then lastly, the legislature previously required that this program be evaluated, and in statute, it stated previously, this has now been repealed, but it stated that the Department of Revenue would contract with a third party, a neutral third party, to evaluate the credit. And the requirements of those evaluations were previously laid out in statute, including the effect of the credit on the level of equity investment in qualified small businesses in Minnesota, the effect of the credit on investment firms other than qualified small businesses, the amount of economic activity, including the number of jobs and wages of those jobs generated by these small businesses, the incremental change in state and local taxes paid as a result of the allowance of the credit, and the net benefit to the Minnesota economy of allowance of this credit relative to alternative uses of the same resources, such as increasing the research and development credit or reducing the corporate franchise tax rate. So again, the commission may consider that evaluation as a template for how to move forward with evaluating this credit. So Madam Chair, members, that's a brief overview of the Angel Investment Credit. Happy to stand for questions or follow up with folks.
Individuals qualify for the Angel Investment Credit, correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
So is it only businesses that receive the investment credit, the Angel Investment Credit, that these restrictions are applied to, or similar ones?
So for an individual investor, they have to apply to the Department of Employment and Economic Development to receive the credit. And then the business must also be certified to meet the requirements laid out in statute. So the individual gets the credit, but the business must qualify in order for the credit to be
I left out in my head the word, I put in the word credit rather than the investment. The one that's going to benefit from it, I'm sorry, excuse me, has these restrictions to send a message that needs to be a startup engaged and not a big business that's just coming in and wanting to use it. I would be curious, however, to know whether the business could be a subsidiary of a multinational, for example, or does it have to be totally independent of that? I don't know the answer to that, but
Madam Chair,
Senator Weber.
I think if you look at a qualified investor or the definition of it on the first page, you know, a definition of a small business, it must have its headquarters and at least 51% of its employees and payroll in Minnesota. and it can have no more than 25. So I don't think we have to probably worry as a subsidiary of a multinational.
We did have, when this was first really being being considered and used and in our tax bills several years ago, really focusing on the fact that it had to be a Minnesota investment and a Minnesotan company, because we had discovered simply by looking at someone's address that the people, the company actually was located in Florida. And so we put a stop to that, which I think was a correction that was much needed. Representative Joy.
I got a question. In the report, he said that annually we see a report of what businesses, you know, took advantage of this, of the 203. Do we get that report here, or where do we see that report to be able to see, like, what we used every year, as you referred to in the report on the annual
And this basis? Would be a report coming from DEED, is that correct?
Yes, and it sounded like it came to this commission, but how do we
get
that?
So do we get that? Do we, who, does that go to the, that report go to the Committee on Commerce?
Madam.
What committee does it come to? I don't remember. I don't remember seeing it. That doesn't mean they don't send it to us, but I don't remember seeing it, or maybe they just have to publish it on their website and consider it delivered to the legislature.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, I believe it's the Tax Committee, but I'd have to double check.
Okay, that would be something else we would like to know. Where does that report come? I seem to recall that we get a lot of enthusiasm from the medical technology sector, and keeping in mind, particularly with med tech stuff, that once you develop an innovation using new technology and so on, it can take you 7 or 8 years to get a patent, way before you'd be able to get into production for it. So it's not a quick fix overnight investment that pays off quickly. It's just not the nature of the beast, which is why the medical technology companies like it so much, the new startups. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm just interested in actually the answer to the question that you asked, because I know that Senator Weber had kind of a response about the size of the firm that this was limited to.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if Mr. Wadeka or Mr. Willett knows if there's any actual limitation to,
who
you know,
it.
Yeah, to who mm-hmm. can do it, yep. if it can be a subsidiary of a larger company, or if there's any of those kind of limits or not. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, I don't have that information with me, but we can certainly follow up.
Reference to the, maybe looking, we can look further at the statute itself to see whether that, that's the case. With regard to the objective, it seems to me that's pretty straightforward. Once again, the question will be, does the activity and the program itself, how successful is it in meeting that objective? And for 2023, it looks like it's the impact is about just under $5 million. And it does have an expiration date of January 1, 2025. And it seems to me that when we have, we take up the angel investment credit on a regular and independent basis. We have never put it in as an ongoing tax credit. We react to the economic situation at the time. Same thing with the regular investment credit. And we're always looking, for whatever reason, at what California is doing and how competitive are we, and with regard to particularly technology investments. Any other questions or comments? These are Mr. Larson, Mr. Whitaker, your small white papers here are really very engaging. I mean, they are. They're very engaging. They're things we should talk about, and we don't take the time in our committees to do that. So we have, we're now to actually to B on the agenda. We now can accept a motion, but first, Senator Weber, if you would have an amendment to the objective for the mortgage interest to include language on the overall, at least, encouragement of homeownership.
Madam Chair, for proper disclosure, of the thanks to Mr. Larson for having produced the language here.
Okay.
And it basically would read, the objective of the Minnesota home mortgage interest deduction is to recognize expenses incurred in generating personal income or wealth and encourage home ownership at all levels of income.
Okay. We have the amendment before us. Is there discussion on the objective? Seeing none, we need to take the roll in order to take a vote on this. Mr. Larson? Or whoever.
Senator Rest?
Yes.
Senator Rest, aye. Representative Bajaj?
Aye.
Representative Bajaj, aye. Representative Davids?
Aye.
Representative Davids, aye. Senator Joskowski?
Aye.
Senator Joskowski, aye. Representative Elkins? Representative Joy?
Aye.
Representative Joy, aye. Senator Klein? Commissioner Marquardt? Senator Weber?
Aye.
There being six ayes and zero nays, the amendment proposed for the objective for mortgage interest deduction is adopted. We now have the three reviews in front of us also ready for a motion. And Senator Agbaje, this is a motion that LBO has prepared. If you'd read it, please.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to adopt the proposed tax expenditure purpose statements for those tax expenditures presented to the Commission for consideration on today, July 10, 2024, by the Legislative Budget Office for the purpose of evaluating those tax expenditures and direct the LBO to proceed with tax expenditure evaluations in accordance with Minnesota Statute Section 3.8855.
Okay, and if you would just add within that the proposed as amended.
As amended by the previous motion.
Okay, we can take any further discussion on that. Then we'll take the roll again.
Senator Rest?
Yes.
Senator Rest, aye. Representative Bajaj?
Aye.
Representative Bajaj, aye. Representative Davids?
Aye.
Representative Davids, aye. Senator Joskowski?
Aye.
Senator Joskowski, aye. Representative Elkins? Representative Joy?
Aye.
Representative Joy, aye. Senator Klein. Commissioner Markwart. Senator Weber.
Aye.
Senator Weber, aye.
Once again, there being six ayes and zero nays, the motion to adopt the recommendation is prevails, and they are adopted. Our next item on the agenda refers to and relates to the operation of the commission itself. We did have, I had put in a bill to take care of some items that, at least in the Senate, state and the state government committee, make sure that doesn't happen next time. But the most compelling one is not to have to wait until after the first of the year and be in doubt about how we can even be called to order. And in the proposed legislation, it was just simply, which should have been in the original legislation, requiring the Commissioner of Revenue to do that. And then after the first meeting is convened, then the action that's possible, electing a chair among its members, can take place. And so this resolution that is in front of you, which I also will give to Senator Representative Agbaje, simply says that resolved by the Turk that the first meeting of the year, each calendar year, will be called to order by the Commissioner of Revenue. Is there any discussion on that motion to adopt this resolution? Seeing none, Mr. Larson.
Senator Rest?
Aye.
Senator Rest, aye. Representative Agbaje?
Aye.
Representative Agbaje, aye. Representative Davids? Representative Davids? Senator Drazkowski?
Aye.
Aye.
Sorry, Representative Davids, aye. Senator Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Elkins? Representative Joy?
Aye.
Senator Klein? Commissioner Markwart? Senator Weber?
Aye.
There being six ayes and zero nays, the motion by Representative Agbaje prevails and the resolution is adopted. The final item on our, or at least item number five on our agenda relates to future meetings. Representative Agbaje and I met with Mr. Larson and staff about our moving forward with our schedule for this year. As you know, we had a slow start last year, so we wanted to make sure that we got some meetings in, but that we also paid attention to the stepped up time that people are going to be devoting to the fall elections. And so we're looking at those calendars, suggesting a meeting in three meetings for the rest of the year, one in August, but after the primary, and then not every, of course, everybody's involved in the primary, but there are some significant ones that may involve members. One in mid-September, and then one in the first week in December, well after the election is over. Mr. Larson has ascertained that 8 of the 9 of us are can be available to attend on August 16th, and we will be getting Representative Agbaje and I, and me, will be getting a list of tax expenditure reviews to consider to be offered on August 16th, and then the mid-September meeting, the first date, we'll see what that ends up being, will be a presentation once again of 1 to 3 evaluations, and then the same then in December to review and approve the annual the TURC annual report. And I think we can expect that having proposing an hour and a half with time certains to begin and end will give us plenty of time to have good discussion on as much as we want. We end earlier, that's fine too, but we're not going to be rushed like we were. It would have been hard to have been finished in an hour. So I think an hour and a half for 3 evaluations works well. And we do have a new person, finally, with us from the LBO's office. And Mr. Larson, I wonder if you would introduce her.
So actually, our new coordinator is out this week, up in the Boundary Waters.
Okay, and it's a him, not a her.
Well, so we have a new coordinator, Amanda, and it's a her. And we also have Thomas Rainey's first day is today. He's in the audience today. He's joining us as a program evaluator to work on our TURC work. So we're very excited to have Thomas as well.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Is there any... I have no other items. Is there anything else anyone would like to bring up? Mr. Werk, we appreciate your presentation this morning, and we stand adjourned.
Here you go. All right, thank you. Okay.